I'm Brian Earle, and this is Bug Bites, part of the Zesty Garden. And in studio with me today is Diane Alston, USU's extension entomologist. And Diane, looking at a couple of articles from entomology today, they're both dealing with mosquitoes. And actually, I see quite a few articles about mosquitoes. Why are mosquitoes so studied?
Well, as you well know, that mosquitoes vector some pretty nasty diseases, and that's one of the big reasons why they are one of the major targets for control to improve health in what has been mostly third world or certainly developing kinds of countries. But it's interesting that you point out these two articles that we're going to talk about here. A lot of the work now is being done in Florida, Puerto Rico, places that we don't think of as necessarily, you know, being those remote third world world countries. It's places that are right here in the U.S. and are having some challenges with mosquito vector diseases.
Well, let's talk about this first article. Mosquitoes are relying on roads to disperse. What?
Isn't that interesting? And so the point being made here, especially in more tropical areas where this Asian tiger mosquito is native to, that by building a large roadway network, you're actually helping the mosquitoes facilitate getting around faster and better.
Why don't they just fly directly?
Well, they have to fly up over the canopy of the trees, which may be higher than they like to fly. They put them into danger of being preyed upon by birds or other predators. So they often want to stay down in a more cryptic, moist, modified environment rather than being up above in the sunlight. And so sticking to roadways, but probably along the edges, taking advantage of cover along the edges is a great way for them to get around.
Well, one of the things that they talked about to stem the mosquito spread was to order authorities to fumigate vehicles at checkpoints. Now,
yes.
This is in Panama.
Right.
I wouldn't want my vehicle fumigated.
Fumigated? I wouldn't either, but I guess they're, you know, in a place where they're trying to prevent this particular mosquito and the diseases it carries from moving into new areas where it hasn't been before. That is one of the ways that they've found to be effective.
Okay, so let's talk about the mosquitoes themselves and the diseases they transmit and what we're doing to try to stem the tide. And I find this interesting because I heard something on NPR yesterday about how the genetics of a male mosquito are being changed, basically to make it sterile. They still mate with the females, but the offspring are not viable.
Right.
So the way some headlines are being written, though, it's sensationalizing it and making it sound worse than it really is.
Right. Well, they're calling them genetically modified mosquitoes. And so when an average person might hear that, especially in a sensationalized news story. What might you think that could mean? A genetically modified mosquito? I would probably feel a little worried, a little scared.
Frankensquito,
yeah,
you know?
Exactly. What's this mosquito going to be like? Is it going to be huge? Is it going to be able to bite me, you know, more times? Is it going to be able to take in a larger blood meal? You know, what are the features that they have changed? And so that just in itself can be sensationalized and make it sound as if it's something negative.
But they don't give all of the information. You just immediately go to your worst fears sometimes.
Exactly. So. But they have been working with genetically modified mosquitoes for many decades now to try to develop some more unique, non-pesticidal, long-lasting, effective control methods so that they can help reduce mosquito populations, reduce the likelihood of them vectoring these nasty diseases to people in places where they're a real problem. So it's actually a very positive thing, not a negative thing.
What was it in the 1950s?
Right.
The screw worm.
Right.
It's been eliminated.
Right.
In 1982. That's what it says here in the article. And I had no idea that was even going on.
Right. So that's a different kind of, it's a fly, but a different kind of fly. And that was an effort that was started. One of the earlier kind of large scale USDA funded projects to address this very devastating pest of cattle. and other kinds of livestock, especially in the southern United States, where the screwworm was a common problem that would actually, as the name sounds, kind of drill into the hide, to the back, the sides of livestock. And when they'd get enough of them on them, it would greatly lower the productivity of the livestock and could even kill them in some cases. And so those early techniques, they used this method called the sterile insect technique. And the idea was that if we can basically overwhelm the wild population, in this case it was the screwworm fly, with these sterilized male screwworm flies, all of the wild females will soon be breeding, or most of them, with these radiated male flies, which are sterile, and they won't result in viable offspring, thus reducing the population of the screwworm over time. And this is exactly what happened, and it has proven to be a tremendously effective approach to eradicating a very pestiferous insect. There are some challenges, though, with radiation. You have to have large-scale facilities to do this. You have to, of course, grow the insects in, you know, an insectary type of facility, and then you have to have these large-scale irradiation types of chambers to treat the insects. And so all of those come with costs and some challenges to them. But then another real downside is these radiated insects don't tend to perform as well. They tend to not be quite as healthy as a wild screwworm fly or mosquito. And so the downside of that then is that they're not doing as good of a job getting out there in the environment and locating these wild females and mating with them. And so you're not getting quite as good of success. And so this new technique that the article is talking about is now going to more modifying the DNA and creating some lethal genes so that when the offspring come along, they're not viable. So the mating is unsuccessful, and getting away from the radiation.
And apparently, it's been done in olive flies in Europe, and to the Mediterranean fruit fly. It says here mosquitoes were previously released in Panama and Brazil, where they achieved a 96% suppression of the dengue mosquito.
Yes, yeah,
that's phenomenal.
That's very impressive.
So what are the downsides to this?
Well, on the surface, it would seem that there aren't any. But I thought one little interesting point that one of the articles pointed out was that when you do alter the population size of one mosquito or one, in this case, a mosquito that's in has a niche to fill, that is the way it makes its living in an area, it can have impacts on other mosquitoes that share that niche or have overlaps with that same niche. And they saw that. So with this yellow fever carrying mosquito, the Aedes aegypti that they had used the genetically modified sterile insect release for, they then saw an increase in populations of the Asian tiger mosquito, which also is a vector of different diseases. This chikungunya you mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. That's an interesting name. and although not as devastating of a disease as yellow fever or dengue, it still is a concern, and we don't want more of those Asian tiger mosquitoes around.
And now they're starting to show up in Florida.
Right.
And so now all of a sudden it's, you know, a certain amount of the population has been concerned about it, but now that it's hit the U.S., all of a sudden, oh, it's in my backyard. And
right.
So now people are getting concerned about it. And to look at some of the way that the press, and I work in the press, but to see some of these headlines and how the articles are written is just completely crazy. The Daily Free Press, I'm not even sure where it is. They don't say where that newspaper is. It says that the mutant mosquitoes somehow vaccinate people with their bites, and which could be good in other parts of the other world. Well, that doesn't vaccinate people.
Right. So they have some interesting takes. And so it's important.
And
the males don't
bite people.
Right.
It's
the males
the
don't bite. It's only so the ones they're releasing aren't even going to be biting people at all.
Yeah.
So that's a good point. So I think it's a good, you know, as I know that it's a policy here at UPR to practice ethical and good quality news broadcasting, and I think that's unfortunately not all media outlets have that same credo, but I think that it would be important to make sure you get the right information out there.
There's always this part of me that says, well, when you tinker with nature, do you really know what your end result is going to be? Because you could, on the surface, it looks like, oh, this is going to be a really great thing, but there could be an unintended consequence.
Yes.
But in this case, we kind of know what's happening because we've used it in the past.
Well, we have, but you still make a good point. You need to proceed with caution. You need to start small, do small scale tests, see what the results are, and not just ramp it up too quickly, because there are often these unforeseen. Even these scientists didn't foresee that where they lowered the populations of the yellow fever carrying mosquito, that they were going to be potentially increasing this Asian tiger mosquito. So, that was
lowering one disease and increasing another.
So I think you do have to still proceed with, we know we have to proceed with caution.
I love the success stories though. And I'm thinking of the tamarisk beetle, mm-hmm. and how it feeds only on tamarisk. And I'm like, let them all go so we can get rid of tamarisk, because mm-hmm. it's such a choking weed of our waterways. But proceeding with caution is always the best.
It is. And the tamarisk beetle example, it does work well, but it doesn't work overnight. You have to still have patience too.
I don't have patience. I want it right now. Diane, thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.
You've been listening to Bug Bites. Diane Alston is USU's extension entomologist. And we'll have her back in again. Thanks, Diane.
Thank you.